Okay. So this is Susan Lanigan, and I'm going to call the special meeting of the Sports Wagering Committee of the Tennessee Education Lottery Commission to order this morning. I think we have some members of the lottery team in the office and some of them on the phone, and I believe we have all of our committee members on the phone, but Alonda, I'll let you go ahead and call roll.
Will Carver?
I'm here.
John Crosland?
Here.
And if all three of the members, starting with Susan, then Will, and then John, can confirm for me that you're able to hear everyone clearly.
I am.
I am too.
Great. So as Susan said, everyone from the TEL sports gaming team is available should you all have any questions regarding any aspects of the application review. And since this meeting is an audio meeting, I ask that before each person speaks, if they will identify themselves.
Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and approve or review and approve the minutes, which were lengthy, but well done and exhaustive, I'm sure. Any comments or questions on those two sets of minutes from September 23rd and October 5th and or a motion?
This is Bill, and I would move to approve both sets of minutes.
This is John.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and I believe Rebecca is on the line. If we'll let her give us an update on sports games.
Certainly. Thank you, Susan, and the committee. On December 23rd, we released the numbers from our first month of sports wagering operation. We were encouraged by the success of the first month of our operators, which included the following November 1 to November 30th figures. Gross wagers were $131 million. Gross payouts were $118 million. And the privilege tax due to the state of Tennessee was $2,363,918. Now, I want to make sure that everyone understands that this is a very fluid number. You can't take the first month and multiply it by 12 and go, oh, that's what we'll do in a year. There will be a great deal of variance from month to month, depending on what sports and what activities are taking place. So just be careful when you see numbers not to extrapolate those into an annual figure. We intend to have our December numbers by the end of January, and that will be an ongoing process. By the time we reconcile each of the operators and deduct any of their promotional either wagers or payouts, etc., it will be towards the end of the next month when we release those figures. So we will have December figures by the end of January. We continue to receive applications for vendors, suppliers, and operators. Today, we are going to recommend the approval of one operator, Churchill Downs, and 12 vendors. If the operator is approved today, as was the case with the first four operators, there are a handful of items that must be completed prior to the operator receiving launch authorization. There's still a critical supplier platform provider application that must be approved by this committee once the vetting has been complete, and the operator must successfully complete the system integrity and security assessment, which was the last thing done by the other three operators after approval, but before they launched. We're recommending scheduling an additional special meeting towards the end of January for the approval of any other completed license and registration applications so that the opportunity for them to launch before Super Bowl is available, because as you all can imagine, that's one of the largest wagering days in sports. We're also recommending that we schedule an advisory council meeting prior to the special meeting at the end of January in order to receive input from the council on some of the issues on the agenda today for discussion. So we'll bring up the topics today, but would like to wait till we have a chance to let the council weigh in before we make any decisions on those particular issues. So with that, I'm more than happy to answer questions or turn it back to Alonda and proceed with the things we have on today's agenda.
Any questions for,
yeah, we're here,
sorry. Any questions for Rebecca before we move on?
This is Will, I don't have any.
Okay. John.
Thank you. And let's move into the application. I think Danielle is going to lead us through those, and I believe we're gonna start with the vendors and then do the Churchill Downs after that. So Danielle, if you're there, we'll turn it over to you.
I'm here, Susan. It's Danielle. Today we have a total of 12 vendors. We have 10 marketing affiliates, one IT support services company, and one money transmitter. In the materials you received the application for Computessenter Fusion Storm, Inc. That is the IT support services vendor. They are registered in Tennessee and have paid. You have one for Third Screen Sports, Inc., another marketing affiliate who is registered in Tennessee. You have the Furman Sports Consulting, another marketing affiliate who is also registered in Tennessee, who is, I'm sorry, I'm making sure he's registered. Yes, they have confirmed registration. There is K&K Ventures, LLC, a marketing affiliate who's registered in Tennessee. iRival Media, LLC, a marketing affiliate who has registered in Tennessee. Intense Industries, another marketing affiliate with that has registered in Tennessee. Rake Tech US, Inc., another marketing affiliate who has not yet registered in Tennessee but has been notified of the need to do so prior to beginning operations. P&P Vegas Group, Inc., a marketing affiliate who is registered in Tennessee. And Teller, Inc., another marketing affiliate who has been notified that they must register in Tennessee prior to operations. Bullpen Sports Network, Inc., another marketing affiliate who has registered. Seven Star Digital Limited, another marketing affiliate who has not yet registered but was notified of the requirement. And then there is Advanced Financial Money Transmission Company, LLC, that is registered in Tennessee. This is a money transmission company that, due to some different circumstances that we discovered, we had asked to register as a vendor. If you have any specific questions, Alonda and I would be glad to address them.
This is Will. As I looked at these vendor applications, I didn't find any adverse information that you all noted for any of them. I appreciate you pointing out the ones that still need to register. I'm comfortable approving all of these, and I would move that we approve all 12.
Yes. Hey, Will. This is John. I agree with everything you said about the applications. My one thing is, I probably, because of issues we've already talked about in the past, I probably should not vote on the money transmission company.
Fair enough.
Can we adjust that motion? And can we adjust your motion to?
I'll move that we approve the first 11.
Yeah, let's do that, because I actually think we may need to have just a little bit of discussion about the last one anyway. So.
Okay.
Will, if I can restate your motion, we'll take the first 11. Is it 11?
Yeah.
The first, all but the last one. How about that? On the list in our book, and there being no questions,
to approve.
I'll second his motion. Yeah.
Okay, great. All in favor of that, please?
Aye.
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 And then recognizing that we, as we've discussed now on several occasions, John probably should not vote on advanced financial. But I would like somebody just to explain to me, Alonda, perhaps you or Danielle, exactly what the role is here. Because, again, it is a company we understand is affiliated, closely affiliated with one of our operators. And I just want to understand exactly what this service will be and how it will work.
Okay. So Advanced Financial Money Transmission Company will allow a player who wants to make deposits into their sports betting account to go into an advanced financial location to be able to make either deposits or withdrawals from their sports betting account. There is a transaction fee, I think, of $2 that is required for them to be able to do that. We have previously said in our Q&A for licensing that, generally speaking, the money transmitter companies do not have to register as a vendor because the money transmitter company goes through a payment processor. So in most instances, what happens is a player will go to a retail location, let's say a CVS as an example, and they will interact with a kiosk through a payment processor, and they will get a code that will then allow them to add money onto their sports betting account. And then that payment processor sends that to the operator for processing. The payment processors are required to register with us as vendors, and we've got several payment processors registered as vendors. So this particular business model is set up where you don't have to go through the payment processor. It basically cuts out the middleman. And so in that instance, we said without the middleman who is traditionally required to be registered, we require this entity to be registered as a vendor because they are, in this scenario, in fact, acting like the payment processor for all intents and purposes.
So, Alonda, can a player go into an advanced financial and deposit money to play on another operator, or only on 24/7?
It's only with respect to Action 247.
And for our other operators, the way a player, funds their account is solely online. Is that right?
Well, they can go through payment processors who also have retail locations, like a CVS, or they could go to even a Western Union, that sort of thing.
So if I went to a Western Union or a CVS, I could access any of the operators?
Well, if you go to a Western Union, they're a money transmitter, so you're not accessing the operator. You would be accessing the whatever payment processor is affiliated with that money transmitter.
Okay, but in a Western Union, I could access any of those transmitters.
No,
processors.
You're accessing it through the payment process.
So I want to. I'm sorry. Do you understand that what I'm asking?
I think you're.
I
don't.
I'm a player, and I want to
place one bet with, you know, with one operator and another bet with another operator. Do I have to? And I don't want to do it online. Do I have to go to two separate places?
Oh, no. So this does not involve placing bets at all. So
you can't go
to any retail location to place a bet, even in this.
Okay. I understand. Okay. I'm not articulating the question. I'm just trying to understand if I want to fund an account. That's what we're talking about, right?
Correct.
So that I'm able to place a bet. Not place the bet, but fund the account so I'm able to place the bet.
Correct.
Okay. And I want to bet some on one through one operator and some through another operator. If I go into Western Union or CBS, can I do that?
So if you go into a, like, for example, a CVS, and I think the payment processor, is it Pay Near Me?
Pay Near Me is the registered vendor.
Pay Near Me is a registered vendor that has kiosk at a CVS store. So you go in and you can get a voucher from that kiosk on Pay Near Me, and then whatever operator that Pay Near Me is associated with, that operator is whose book you can put that money on. And several of our operators are registered with, have Pay Near Me as their vendor. So it could be more than one operator that, it just depends on, you know, who you have your account with.
I got it. Okay, thank you. And then, again, just to make sure I understand, so I could now walk into an Advanced Financial with my own funds and use it, but the only thing I can use there is the Action 247, right?
Correct. Yes. This Advanced Financial would be a vendor of Action 247.
Just like the other entity you mentioned is a vendor for the others. Okay, that makes sense. And, okay. And can I buy lottery tickets at Advanced Financial?
Like an Advanced Financial location, our lottery statute prohibits allowing a location like an Advanced Financial that provides deferred presentment services to be licensed. I mean, to register as a retailer or to apply as a retailer. We don't register a licensed retailer. Sorry. I got the stink eye from Andy. I knew when I said it.
I know. My questions are, I apologize. They're not as articulate as I want them to be. I'm just trying, you know, just candidly feels a little funny to me. From a public policy perspective, and now so there's a prohibition for selling lottery tickets at a establishment like this, but there's not one. There's nothing like that with regard to sports betting. I just want to make sure that. I mean, we're
correct. There's nothing like that in the Sports Gaming Act.
Okay. So really, there's nothing about this that violates any part of the legislation.
No.
Okay. Well,
maybe,
now that I've
noticed,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think what you were getting at, Susan, is it feels a little bit awkward, the idea that somebody could so easily use borrowed money to put that money into a sports wagering account. I mean, but I also understand that apparently this mechanism of going to some third-party location and using Pay Near Me or whatever, it sounds like that's something that happens with mobile sports wagering already. This just, because of where it's located, I think gives some pause.
Okay.
Right, because I'm not getting an advance or a loan, I don't think, when I go to pay near me.
Right.
So, yeah, it's the potential linking of those two things that make me, you know, but I don't believe Will listened to what Alonda's saying unless somebody tells me differently that's our issue too.
I agree. I mean, somebody could go to Advanced Financial and then go next door to CVS to pay near me and do the exact same thing.
Yep.
So.
Okay. All right. I apologize for that tangent. I just, you know, again, in the sort of responsible gaming vein, it feels a little off, but those are the only questions I have. Will, do you have any others? And if not, do you want to make a motion? Or I would say, Alonda or Rebecca or Danielle, do any of you have comments or anyone else?
We have no additional comments.
Okay. I don't either. Thank you.
Well, I think you've done a good job, Susan, of articulating what our concern is, but I don't think that concern is one that we are authorized to be the arbitrators of. So with that said, I would move to approve the application because the application complies with the statute and is satisfactory based on the review done by TEL staff.
Okay, with that, I guess I'll, recognizing John can't vote, I'll call the motion. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Okay, sorry about that again. And so now, if there's nothing else on the vendors, why don't we move on to the Churchill Downs application. Is that still
and before you get to the Churchill, before you get to the Churchill Downs application, I'd like to tell you that I inadvertently did not check the box where I signed it, so it is approved by me, and that was just overlooked it. So I apologize for that. I'm sorry, on page 2 it should say I concur with the you would have checked I concur with the recommendation, right, Rebecca? That's correct. Thank you. Okay, Danielle.
Okay, we are now considering the operator application for Churchill Downs Interactive Gaming, LLC. The DBA is Bet America. We confirmed active status and incorporation in both Delaware and Tennessee. The operator is 100% owned by Churchill Downs Incorporated. There were 4 institutional investor applications on file that we received with the application, and there were 5 key personnel. As far as the legal division review is concerned, we have reviewed everything to make sure that it satisfies all legal requirements. We have confirmed and received confirmation, which was attached as Exhibit A, that in the jurisdictions where Bet America is already licensed, Arkansas, Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, that they are active and in good standing. There were no civil judgments against it. They have submitted the appropriate information on how they will prevent wagers by a minor and be conducting wagering. We reviewed the requirements of patron accounts, their house rules, any dispute resolution provisions on patron complaints. All of those satisfied the requirements of the rules. We have listed their suppliers as well as their vendors that they will be using. They have 2, I would say, critical operational suppliers. One being Cambi, which will power their platform. This supplier has already been approved by the committee, but they have a second player account management supplier, GAN, that has not yet been approved, that we are hoping to finalize the review of as soon as possible. Additionally, we have reviewed compliance with laws as well as their AML internal controls. You'll notice that in this section of the report, we've added an additional section to verify that the insurance requirements have been met. We have their certificates of insurance on file, and we have verified that they meet that they have $1 million per occurrence and $5 million general aggregate in general liability insurance, and they have $25 million total of cyber and E&O liability. The insurance coverage was provided by a nationally recognized insurance company with a financial rating of A or better. Are there any questions on this section of the report before we move on? The next report is the security section. The next section is the security review. Much like in the other operators and suppliers, the company was reviewed. We did credit checks, checked for civil actions, tax liens, bankruptcies, and judgments. We did other checks as well as OFAC checks. On each of the individuals, the five keys, we did credit checks, civil action checks, tax liens, bankruptcy, and judgment checks. OFAC checks, driver's histories, employment verification, reference checks, address history, social media, and we reviewed financial records. I know that Danny gave us an update this morning. There were a couple of references that could not be reached initially by TrueView that he has since reached since the report was completed. And he is on the phone as well if anyone has any specific questions about this section of the report. There was nothing that was found that we believe would impact their suitability. Any questions for Danny or that section at this time? Okay, we'll move on to the finance review on page 16. The TEL staff submitted all of the financial information to Hoskins and Company, similarly to all the other operators we've approved thus far. Some high-level findings that have been included were that there was a significant increase in sales over the past 2 years, profitability was strong, applicants' operating cash flow declined a bit relative to sales, but is still at a healthy level. There was also confirmation that we received the business plan and financial projections. They provided all banking and financial institutions information that was required. We also have received the $500,000 bond that was required from them. We have that on file. And we have confirmed that their reserve account has been set up. We have that information, and we have confirmation that it will be sufficient and that the cash balance will remain at a sufficient level to include all patron deposits and funds. And Andy is sitting here next to me if you have any specific questions about the financial review. Hearing that, we'll move on to the audit review. We verified that they submitted an audit of its financial transactions. They provided their independent accountant information. And Christy reviewed for the internal controls to make sure it was sufficient with all rules and mix. She provided an attached gap analysis, which just have a few minor things that we will certainly ensure get squared away and we have some clarification on prior to any launch. And she confirmed that they are members of SWIMA and meet the integrity monitoring requirements. And Christy is here as well.
Is that someone else?
Must have been someone else.
Oh, sorry. So if there are any questions about the audit section of the review, Christy is here as well. Okay.
I had one question.
Sorry, go ahead.
Hey, this is John. Was it Price Waterhouse Coopers was the auditor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. I just saw in there it said that the information they gave was something different.
Of course.
I can't remember the exact name, but just confirming that.
So, I'm sorry, Christy, correct me if I'm wrong. Their audited financial statements that they provided were audited by PricewaterhouseCoopers, but the independent accounting firm they'll be using is MCM CPAs and Advisors.
That is correct.
Yeah, so they'll be using that for what? For their internal accounting?
Yes, they're in their financial information for the Tennessee location will be done out of Louisville.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be their audit firm or their outsourced accounting firm?
I don't know that I can answer that exactly for you, John. I can get that information for you.
Okay.
I was under the impression it was going to be their accounting firm going forward.
Okay. I'm just curious. Don't worry about it.
If it were going to be outsourced accounting, it wouldn't say independent, right?
I don't know
if that's our language there. So that's probably going to be their auditing firm. But I do think it's worth, Christy, just figuring that out. Good question.
Will do.
On page 20, we have the information system review. We have confirmed the geolocation provider will be GeoComply. We confirmed the server location and security within the state of Tennessee. We are still, as Rebecca stated earlier, we're still awaiting the security assessment and an integrity assessment, as well as the final GLI certification prior to launch. But much like the other operators, this was something that we required for launch but was not available at the time of licensing approval. David Kahn and Andy have also gone through and done a detailed gap analysis of the technological compliance requirements in our mix and rules, and any gaps or points of clarification they may see. It is a short list that's been attached as Exhibit E. We will make sure to have clarification of all those points prior to launch. And again, Andy is here if you have any specific questions about this section of the report.
Danielle, three times you've used the MIX acronym. Why don't you explain to the committee what that is?
I apologize. The Minimum Internal Control Standards. The board promulgated both the rules standards and regulations as well as the minimum internal control standards under which we review the technological compliance requirements once we have documents submitted by the operators. And the last section, advertising and marketing review. We have, Luann and Dave have reviewed all of their customer services plan, their responsible gaming plan, promotions, rewards, loyalties, and reviewed the internal controls for the same. I believe that Luann is still waiting for their final advertising and marketing plan before the initiation of such marketing and advertising, but otherwise the information provided has met the internal controls requirements for those specific areas in this review. And Luann is on the phone if there are any questions relating to that. Okay. That being said, that concludes the summary of the report, and we recommend approval of Churchill Downs Interactive Gaming, LLC.
Great, thank you. Any questions from John or Will?
This is John.
I don't have any. I thought it was, you guys did a great job putting it together. Financials look great. Just think overall the application looks really good. Appreciate y'all's work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. One of you gentlemen want to make a motion?
John Valiant, I'm so moved.
Yeah, John, thank you, and I apologize. Unfortunately, this would just be the committee of the board that can
approve this, but thank you.
I'll make the motion to approve. This is John.
And this is Bill.
Okay. I believe I have a motion and a second. So all in favor? Aye.
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 Thank you. Let's go back to the agenda, Alonda. And I see under subsection F, we have at least three items for further discussion, and I'm going to turn this over to you, and you can take them in whatever order works best.
Okay, great. I'll start with eSports. So we are beginning to receive requests from operators regarding approval of various eSport events. And just as a refresher for the committee as well as those council members that are listening, at the advisory council's June meeting, we first talked about eSports and putting it on our approved list of events. And at that time, the committee and the council asked us to talk about proposals on how the board should handle eSports. And then in subsequent meetings, we presented a list of approved events, and eSports was listed as a category of an approved event. But we made a footnote that when it came to particular leagues and games that each individual operator had to submit for approval. And we issued a compliance directive that outlined the process that the operators would utilize to submit for approval of sporting events. And so since all of that, internally, the TEL has gotten together a process when those types of requests come in for approval, we make sure that all of the information required under the compliance directive has been provided. And then there is a sports gaming task force that consists of myself, Danielle, our CFO, Andy, and Christy, and then Rebecca, as the CEO, has the final say to vote on the requested event. So we have a request for a couple of eSports events or matches, and one of the issues that still remains outstanding that we wanted to have for discussion is that at that council meeting it was raised the concern because eSports does typically involve and can cater to a younger demographic, that we consider that fact as we are looking at what events we are approving. And so we wanted to talk about a recommendation for having a policy when it comes to us considering these events, and if you think it's necessary to promulgate it in a rule, we can do that. But we've looked at other jurisdictions and kind of how they have approached approving various e-sporting events. There is one school of thought that only e-sporting events that where the participants are all 18 years or older. And then there are other jurisdictions that say where the majority of the participants are 18 years or older. And so we would recommend that, you know, just we set it kind of as a policy for us that 18 years or older, but we wanted to get the committee's input.
Will 18 years or older certainly seems consistent with the statutory prohibitions on secondary athletics and that sort of thing, although I guess it's possible that in an Olympic event you could have somebody under the age of 18.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think in this one we do have pretty strong guidance from the legislature and, you know, also from the council. This was the concern raised by the council. So I think, and as I think about it, if we get a year or two into this and other jurisdictions are, you know, changing course and permitting events with players under 18, or that no longer becomes a concern, we can always revisit it. But I think it's appropriate to take the more conservative approach right now. What do you think, John?
I would agree.
Okay.
I just don't feel, I feel like that's something you can't really unwind if you make a mistake. So I would rather go the conservative route.
Okay, Alonda, do you need a motion on that or just guidance from us? What's the next step?
I think it just, we can take it as guidance if you all are comfortable, and because yes. If we're not going to, if we're just going to, we'll use it as to help us as we do the reviews and make that as part of our checklist. Make that a rubric that we don't approve them if we find out that the participants are under 18.
Yeah. And again, if you're finding that hard to manage or something changes, you can always come back and we can discuss it further.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thank you.
So the next two items for discussion are really two that I think that I just wanted to tee up and say that and recommend that we provide both the committee and the council with what we would call educational materials on this matter, and then at the subsequent meeting that is set for the end of January, we can actually propose whether or not to approve or move forward on them. So the first one deals with sports pools. So this where is a form of wagering as opposed to a specific sporting event, which is why we wanted to discuss it with the committee. And so sports pools are basically a fixed price point form of betting where wagers are placed against other bettors who have entered the same event, and odds aren't involved. Each player, the payoff depends on the number of users and the number of winners. And so we have an operator who has requested to be allowed to use this form of wagering, and we would like to submit kind of the presentation that they have given to us and as materials for you all to get a better understanding of what sports pools are and how they would be handling them, and then be able to make a determination if this is if we can move forward.
So you would send that to the council as well, right, and have the council review it, talk about it at its next meeting?
Yes.
Perfect. I think that's great. I think we need to educate ourselves and let the council kind of weigh in and make a call, hopefully be prepared to make a call at our next meeting.
Okay, great. And then the final item for discussion involves peer-to-peer sports betting. So we have an operator applicant who offers this type of betting in addition to what is traditional bookmaking. And so on the peer-to-peer, that is where a player makes a bet and the player can set limits on how much they're willing to wager. And then another customer or player can take on the entire wager, or several players can take on the bet up to an established limit. And in this instance, it's not the operator that's establishing the offer. It's the player. And so not only can players make bets on games, but they can also create in-game prop wagers. And so one of the reasons we think it's worthy of discussion is because as we look at our rules, it's, you know, contemplates traditional bookmaking where the onus is on the operator to establish the bets, set the lines, and, you know, review all of that, review the odds and based on information that they have. And so we feel like this is a new area, and we thought it would be helpful if we discussed it with the committee and the council.
Yeah, that's, I don't know how you monitor or regulate. I'm ignorant when it comes to it. It sounds risky just in the way you described it, but obviously something we need to learn more about. Maybe Will and John already understand it better than I do, but I certainly would need a lot more information and would like the council's input on that as well. Any thoughts, John or Will?
This is John. I would agree. I would appreciate some counsel from our council as well.
And John, you are meaning council inside the the council with an EL inside the lottery, and Alonda and Danielle and the sports wagering council. Not, you are excluding Susan and me from council.
I'll take it from anybody who can give it.
Well, I would also like to know if other jurisdictions are doing either of these pools, or
the
peer-to-peer, and if so, you know, how that's working out.
Yeah, pools are definitely being done in other U.S. jurisdictions. The peer-to-peer is not in any U.S. jurisdiction. It's international. So this is something they're trying to, with it being, with our jurisdiction being an online sports wagering, the media coverage has been that the companies are looking to those jurisdictions that have the online to be able to kind of establish their footprint in the United States.
Well, yeah, I want to be fair, but we're not really, and is this one of our current operators that is proposing this, or would this be a new operator?
This would be a new operator.
And would it be something you think our current operators would also want to do?
I'm not aware that the current operators have this peer-to-peer model. Now, the operator that has proposed this has traditional bookmaking in addition to this, but again, like I said, the media coverage has been that they are looking to do the peer-to-peer here because we're online. So we're taking the application as that's what they're asking us to consider as part of considering their application, not just the traditional element. But I will say that, you know, they do a note that says they can turn off and turn on as many features as necessary per regulation. So I do want to make clear that they do say that they offer traditional bookmaking.
Okay.
current hold that we have, does that have any impact on peer-to-peer? I mean, does that stay the same as now, or would that have any impact?
I mean, we think that it could. I mean, this is new to us, so part of some of the questions that we have is how then do we determine that?
Lots of questions, I think. So let's continue to do the research that you've started, get with the council, and again, if we're ready to make a decision, if we have all those answers, then we can do it at the next meeting, and we certainly will try to do that. But if we can't get it all done by then, we'll just keep working. I don't want to feel too rushed on this because it is new and something that nobody else is doing yet, at least not in this country.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anything else, Alonda or Rebecca, to come before this meeting today?
I'll reach out to all of you to find a date that works for everybody. We'd like to push it to as far back as January as possible so that we can get as much of the due diligence information back as possible. We have large gaps of information that still need to be provided to us by two of the other three operators. We think one can certainly be complete in time for the Super Bowl. We need a whole lot more information from the other two in order for them to be ready for the Super Bowl. But so I will reach out to all of you and find a date late in January that you'll all be available, and then we'll see if the council can either meet right before your meeting or the day before your meeting. But let me start with you three and dates, and we'll go from there.
Right. Okay. Anything else from John or Will?
Not for me.
How about a motion that we adjourn?
So moved.
Thank you all. One other quick note. I assume this will all be virtual still. I don't think we'll be ready to meet in person in January.
Okay.